जनवल्लभ गिरिवरधारी यशोदनन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन यशोदनन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन यमुनतीरवनचारि यमुनतीरवनचारि जय राधामाधव कुञ्ज बिहारि जय राधा माधव कुञ्ज बिहारि जय ओम विष्णुपाद भृतमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशत श्री श्रीमान भाई चरण अरविंद भक्ति वेदांत गोस्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस श्री श्रीमद शिल भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती प्रभुपाद ठाकुर की जय श्रीमद भागवतम की जय ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री गुरु इन गौरांगा This morning we're reading from Canto 3, Chapter 20, Text 26. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Pahimam paramatmangste prasena prasanena srijam prajaha ta imaya bhitum papa upakramantimam prabho Pahimam paramatmangste Prishanena strijam prajaha Ta ima yabhitum papa Upakramantimam prabho
Amen.
Ahimam paramatse. Rasin. So before we do the word-by-word translation, what do you recognize in that first line? Anybody? Pahimam, what does that mean? Save me, protect me. Pahimam, and the next word? Calling out to Paramatma. Brahma's calling out to Paramatma. Please protect me. He's being attacked by his own creation. All right, so word for word translation. Pahi, protect, mam, me, paramatman, O Supreme Lord, te, your, presanena, by order, asrijam, I created, praja, living beings, ta ima, those very persons, yabhitum, to have sex, papa, sinful beings, upa kramanti, are approaching, mam, me, Prabhu, O Lord. Lord Brahma, approaching the Lord, addressed him thus, my Lord, please protect me from these sinful demons who were created by me under your order. They are infuriated by an appetite for sex and have come to attack me. Purport. It appears here that the homosexual appetite for males for each other is created in this episode of the creation of the demons by Brahma. In other words, the homosexual appetite of a man for another man is demonic and is not for any sane male in the ordinary course of life. Hare Krishna. That's all we get today. I didn't choose to give this class. I'm the substitute teacher. Nobody else wanted to take this. And one day, we had our little temple in North Carolina. We had something going on. We were reading Bhagavatam with a group on Zoom. And every Sunday, then we started having gatherings at our place, and so some people came. And one day, this guy that I was trying to get to come, he's a really good musician, and he's also gay, and we just happened to land on this section. And so afterwards, I went to him, because like, this is really hard to take. Some things you wish, why did Prabhupada say that? But you never know how it's going to work out. So this devotee, after the incident, I went and apologized to him. And I said, you know, we didn't arrange to read that just because you came here. And he said, no, actually, Prabhupada's writings, he's always warning about the dangers of men and women getting together. And so finally, I felt included. Prabhupada was saying something to me. So some people are going to take this. I'm glad that nobody wanted to speak on this. If everyone was enthusiastic, yes, I want to talk on this. Because some devotees, they'll take some statement by Prabhupada and they'll build their whole life around that, which can be good take one statement given by Prabhupada and build your whole life around it, but to take something like this, something obscure, and as we read on and we look at the life of Prabhupada, we see how he has a lot of disciples that are homosexual, and he doesn't say, well, that keeps you from approaching Krishna. He knew that that's what the way they were. He didn't say, you're demonic, you cannot have access here. He allows them in. And I was at a family gathering, and so some of my in-laws and extended family, and out of them, a few of them are gay. This was years ago, like 30 years ago. I was at a family gathering, we were sitting at the table, and one of them is one of those really aggressive kind of people. He was a lawyer at the time. And in front of everyone at the dinner table, he asks, are there any gay people in the Hare Krishna movement? And I said, well, yeah. And he asked, well, what percentage? And I asked him, well, what's the percentage in the world? And he said, it's about 5%. And I thought for a minute, I said, yeah, we got about the same ratio. And some of them are the leaders. So he was really happy with that, because some of the leaders at that time, and at this time also, are from that, what would you call it? That society, that mindset. And as I get to know more of these people, I see that there are a lot of devotees that are like that, and I don't find them to be any more demonic than anyone else. In fact, some of them are very saintly. It seems to be just like being left-handed. In some cultures, being left-handed is considered to be sinful. In fact, the word sinister literally means left-handed. Sin means left. So in some cultures, being left-handed is considered sinful, but I don't know. I know a lot of left-handed people, and they seem to be no more sinful or demonic than anyone else. And so perhaps it's like that as well. But here it is. Prabhupada says this. We are followers of Prabhupada. We're supposed to support what he says. It doesn't mean we have to go out and promote it. We don't have to speak on these things unless you're assigned to speak on this verse. And I'm sorry. So I'm going to try to make the most out of this. Main thing is, Brahma is approaching the Lord and saying, please protect me from these sinful demons. That's another point. It doesn't say, because like for years I've heard devotees say, homosexuals were born from the buttocks of Lord Brahma. But no, it's demons were born, and it's a demonic tendency. And as we read on, Brahma, the Lord says, cast off this body of yours. Thus commanded by the Lord, Brahma cast off his body, which Vishwanath says gives up a thought. Brahma's thoughts are like his body. So he gives that up, that thought, that body, whatever it is, the body. And then text 29, the body given up by Brahma took the form of the evening twilight, a time which kindles passion. The asuras took it for a damsel whose lotus feet resounded with the tinkling of anklets. Her eyes were wide with intoxication. Her body is described. Lovely smile played on her lips. She cast a sportful glance at the asuras, and the asuras go after her. So these are not homosexuals. These are everything sexuals. They're after everything. That's what's demonic. And For years I've heard that Prabhupada said to someone, just decide whether you're male or female, pick one, don't go back and forth. And I'd heard that for years, and so this morning I looked it up, I found the letter. It was written in 1975, so it's documented. It's not just somebody saying Prabhupada said this. Dated June 10th, 1975, Prabhupada's in Honolulu. The letter is to Jennifer Wayne Woodward, who's in San Francisco. My dear Jennifer, please accept my greetings. I'm in due receipt of your letter, dated June 6th, 1975, and have noted the contents. First of all, you decide whether you are female or male, then be one or the other. Then you may enter our temple anytime you like. But sometimes man and sometimes woman, that is not proper. Such awkward thing cannot be allowed. It will be disturbing to others. Anyway, continue to chant Hare Krishna as much as possible. I hope this meets you in good health. So he didn't condemn this person and say, you are excluded from chanting Hare Krishna. He welcomed everybody in. Also, in San Francisco, 1967, he's discussing how to put on a play about Lord Chaitanya with Hayagriva. And he goes into detail about when Lord Chaitanya is born, these people come, they're neither men nor women. What do you call them? Is that eunuch? And Hayagriva asks, you mean androgynous? And yes, is that what it's called? Anyway, this is some of the culture in India, that these men who more identify as women, they dress as women, they come to a home when a child is born. And this friend of mine, when his son was born in India, he said, they come and they get pretty aggressive. You have to give them a donation. Or they say, we're not going to bless your child and your child's not going to live a long life. And so this is how they make a living. They just go around and bless people and threaten them. And they're respected in society. That's just their job. So Prabhupada is saying they were around during Lord Chaitanya's time. It's not a new thing. Let's see, what else do I have here? Yeah, this gets really awkward. How do we support what Prabhupada says and at the same time welcome other people in? But we see from Prabhupada's life that he is like that. Another time something like this came up, it was at the Rath Yatra in New York City. At the question answer booth, Jayadvaita Swami was there. There's always a big crowd for him because he's a very, I wouldn't say he's entertaining. People, sophisticated New Yorkers are entertained by his way of speaking and answering questions. So someone came up, took the microphone. It was his turn to ask the question. He gave a speech how in biblical times it was very dangerous to eat pork because there was no refrigeration, and so therefore there's this biblical thing that if you eat pork, that's sinful, but now we have refrigeration and people are not dying from it. In the same way, homosex was seen as sinful because actually it was very dangerous for someone to engage in that. Now we have sanitation, we have hygiene, and so it's not so dangerous. And I believe that Jesus, who accepts everyone and loves everyone, he would be supporting and accepting of gay people. So that was the guy's speech. Then he handed the microphone back to Jayadvaita Swami, who very calmly said, so you're saying that something that was spoken back at one time, the situation has changed, so now we have a different situation and a different set of rules. But one rule that remains constant is that everyone in the material world is infatuated with the desire for sex. And if we analyze it objectively, we see that people spend a tremendous amount of time considering it, paying for it, planning for it, and then when you finally engage in it, it's over, and then there's so many botherations that come after that. And he said, we have been duped, we have been tricked by our own senses to think this is the big deal. Now he, Jaidwaita Swami, he can say this with conviction. And for a moment there in the park in New York City, everyone was stunned and they were all listening. And the guy who asked the question, he totally agreed with it. And he started making another speech, said, that's why I love coming to you people. You have such deep answers. I love what you have to say. But all the other New Yorkers were sitting there holding their chins, like looking down, and they're like, you know, just quiet, let him keep talking. And they wanted to hear what Jaidwaita Swami had to say. And he went on talking how pursuing sex is a big waste of time. And I was like, what is going on? What hypnotic spell is he put on these people? So that's the big thing here. They are infuriated by an appetite for sex and have come to attack me. So that's what's demonic. In other places, Prabhupada talks about, well, even in this section here, demigods, they're not so interested. Demons, really interested. And so because of that, they can be tricked and fooled. The whole story of churning the ocean of milk. Lord Vishnu tells the demigods, don't worry about anything, don't be attracted by anything, just do your duty and I'll take care of everything. And as a result, at the end of the whole story, there's the conclusion, the demons, the demigods, they all did equal amount of work churning the ocean. When the nectar was brought about, the demons didn't get anything, because they were so distracted. They were distracted by all the things that came out. They were unable to cooperate. That's another thing about demons. They can't cooperate. As soon as the nectar came out of the ocean, they ran for it and grabbed it from the hands of Dhanvantari. Here's a person giving a gift. Here you go. They have no respect for him. They just grab it. And they're all shouting, here's the mantra. Aham purvam, aham purvam, na tvam, na tvam, iti prabho. So, aham, me, purvam, first. Me first, me first. Aham purvam, aham purvam. Na tvam, na, not you. Na tvam, na tvam. Iti prabho. That's Shukadev Goswami telling the story to Maharaj Parikshit. Iti, thus, Prabhu, my dear Prabhu, this is the way they were speaking. So, me first, me first. So they couldn't cooperate. That's the way demons are. They don't cooperate, they don't follow the directions, they don't look at the directions. When we study the chapter 16 of Bhagavad Gita, the list of godly qualities, Abhayam, sattva sang shuddhi. So, fearlessness, always trying to improve yourself, cultivating knowledge for self-improvement. These are godly qualities, whereas the demonic qualities are arrogance, pride, anger, conceit, harshness, ignorance. So when we see those qualities, so we could see those qualities in heterosexual people. We see them in homosexual people. We see them in all kinds of people. We see left-handed people in all societies. places where being left-handed is seen as sinful, you'll see fewer left-handed people because they are going against their nature and trying to do everything with their right hand and trying to hide the fact that they are left-handed. But among people where we see godly qualities, we can accept them as godly, no matter what family they come from, no matter what society, or gender preference. So that's who's being born here. These are just demons. And demons are just everything sexual. They don't make any distinction. So to have some kind of restraint is seen as a godly quality. What is it? Dhamma? Dhamma, self-control. I was sitting with a group of college students out on the campus in North Carolina, and we were reading Bhagavad Gita, because that's what I do with college students. I sit them down and we pass out Gitas and we read and discuss. We're reading the section on controlling the senses. If you can gain control over desire and anger, then you can become happy. And then I noticed today it was all boys. It was about five of them. It was a warm day. They'd been jumping on the slack line, throwing frisbees around. A few of them didn't have shirts on. They were big, muscular, good-looking. And then I said, you know, we all practice some sense restraint. What would life be like if you had no restraint at all, and you did everything that your senses asked you to do? And then I just paused and let them think about it for a while. They looked around and they said, I probably would end up in jail very quickly. And then I asked them, do you know anybody that's like that, that lives without any restraint? And they all had a friend, someone that they knew, someone that was, you know, they were sharing a dorm room with, and they said, yeah, that guy, he had no, it was really difficult to be around that person. And so it's something that we all do. We all practice some kind of restraint. We don't just do whatever our senses ask us to do. And we don't always express our anger. So the more we have control over it, the more we become happy, the more we get close to sattva, which is the defining feature of the demigods. That's what's going on here. And again, this whole discussion is just an over-explanation of Vidura's question. How did the Prajapatis increase the population? Did they go about it on their own? Did they work all together? Did they have a population with their wives the normal way? And then Maitreya answers by saying, when the equilibrium of the three modes of nature was agitated by the desire of the living entity, by the Supreme Lord, and by time. So then he goes in this whole description of creation, the lake of the navel and the lotus flower. Brahma appears. Brahma has the creation. He creates the different kinds of illusions. And he doesn't like it. And then here we are. So this is going on. He's going to keep going on describing the creation. So I gave class that day on, what was it, five different kinds of illusions. And so we could, and again, I'll bring it up. Why is there all of this illusion? Why is it so hard to see Krishna? If Krishna wants us to be with him, if that's the whole purpose of the creation, why is he making it so hard? And for some people, they are plagued with desires. Yes, we're all controlling desires and anger just to get along, just to cooperate. And some people have desires that are so strong, those desires ruin their whole lives. They have to go and get counseling and therapy. They have to go with other people who have similar desires and talk about it and help each other out. For most of us, we drive by a liquor store, we don't even notice it. For other people, going by it, they're marking, okay, there's one there, there's another one there, there's another store there. They know exactly where they are, they're calculating, it takes 5 minutes to get there. I'm not gonna go there, I'm not gonna do that anymore. But I know where it is, and their mind's just struggling with it and fighting with that. So why? Why did Krishna make it so hard for us to control these senses and to control our thoughts? It just doesn't seem, is it fair? That some of us, we don't even notice those things, and others are plagued by it. Okay, so here. So yesterday, in our Bhagavad Gita class, we were reading from chapter 11, Universal Form, and we got to text 33, and this purport just seems really appropriate to what's going on. If you want, you could look it up, 11:33, Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, get up, prepare to fight, and win glory. Conquer your enemies and enjoy a flourishing kingdom. They are already put to death by my arrangement, and you, O Savyasachi, can be but an instrument in the fight. So Arjun, seeing universal form, seeing everything being done already, that's really helpful. If we understand, everything is going to go on. And here's where Prabhupada talks about the purpose of the whole creation. Maybe that'll help us make sense out of our lives and the subject we're discussing today. So purport, Savyasachin refers to one who can shoot arrows very expertly in the field. Thus, Arjuna is addressed as an expert warrior capable of delivering arrows to kill his enemies. Quote, just become an instrument, nimitta matram. This word is also very significant. The whole world is moving according to the plan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Foolish persons who do not have sufficient knowledge think that nature is moving without a plan, and all manifestations are but actual accidental formations. Okay, foolish people can't see that everything is the plan of the Lord. He tells Arjuna to become an instrument in his hands. All this is going to go on anyway. You become an instrument. You do what I want, because it's going to happen anyway. Foolish people are not able to see the plan. They think everything is accidental. Years ago, I heard Bhakti Tirtha Swami referring to this. He said, from a fool to a tool. That's what we're trying to transform ourselves from, being a fool to a tool. So foolish people who do not have sufficient knowledge think that nature is moving without a plan, and all manifestations are but accidental formations. Okay, Krishna has a plan. What is the plan? I'll do it, make it clear. But we, moment by moment, we're like, what do I do? There are many so-called scientists who suggest that perhaps it was like this, or maybe like that, but there is no question of perhaps and maybe. There is a specific plan being carried out in this material world. What is this plan. Okay, so here we go. Why did Brahma create all the illusion? Why all of these things going on, demons attacking him? Is it all part of the plan? And here Prabhupada says, yes, everything that's happening to you is part of the plan. And what is the plan? Here he goes. This cosmic manifestation is a chance for the conditioned souls to go back to Godhead, back to home, as long as they have the domineering mentality which makes them try to lord it over material nature, they are conditioned. But anyone who can understand the plan of the Supreme Lord and cultivate Krishna consciousness is most intelligent. Okay, domineering mentality makes them try to lord it over material nature. As long as we have that, we are conditioned. But anyone who understands the plan of the Supreme Lord and cultivates Krishna consciousness is most intelligent. So we get, okay, here's the plan, here's what you're supposed to do, but it's always these sketchy things, like moment by moment, what do we do? This is where our discrimination comes in, and we have to understand the broad plan. And in our discussion yesterday, we were saying, if Krishna has a plan, if he wants us to do something specific, sometimes it seems like he's not a very good communicator. It's like, can't you make it more clear? But it's not a children's story. It's not going to be like a real straightforward thing. We are adults. He expects us to grow into this. Understand the basic plan. Prabhupada didn't come here to put homosexuals in their place or to put women in their place or so many things that some devotees feel that's his mission. I know someone who, every time I see him, he's just so convinced. Prabhupada, when he was in New Vrindavan, said, very soon, mango trees will grow here. The world is changing. Pretty soon, that's going to be a tropical climate. We have to get ready for that. And no, that's, maybe he said that one time. I've never read it anywhere. I've never heard it anywhere. But this devotee, that's his whole presentation. These people, they're not doing a deep reading of Prabhupada's books. As you see, as like, for instance, in the sixth canto, when the Yamadutas are asked, you represent Yamaraj, tell us what is Dharma. And they make a presentation. Prabhupada entirely goes along with it. He supports everything they say in his purport. Then when the Vishnudutas speak, they say, alas, this is such a sinful thing that in a place where Dharma should happen, adharma is happening. These people clearly don't know what they're speaking about. And then Prabhupada supports everything the Vishnudutas say. So he just goes against everything he just supported. What's he doing? Why does he do that? Mercy is superior to justice, yes. But then, first of all, he's establishing justice. And that's required, yeah. He's making a point, he's making points. But if you just stay on one side, you're just going to think, that's it. You have to keep reading his books. Don't just stop in one place. Okay. So here, he's giving the overall thing, overall plan. Also, Arjun, with Ashwatthama, he's given the instruction, well, he's getting directions on all sides. Someone's saying, spare him, some are saying, kill him immediately, and all sides are giving good instructions. Then Krishna tells Arjun, all right, go ahead. And Arjun's like, go ahead and what? satisfy everybody. So then Arjun makes a decision and makes a concession to appease everyone there. Okay, as long as they have the domineering mentality, which makes them try to lord it over material nature, they are conditioned. So we get little hints here. Give up the domineering mentality, then we can see the plan of the Lord more clearly. And then you have people like Prabhupada who say, what are you talking about? It's not clear. It's very clear. It's right there in Bhagavad Gita. It's not like something you have to search for. One time somebody was saying, it's very difficult to find the pure representative of Krishna. And Prabhupada says, what are you talking about? We are canvassing. We're going to you, saying, here. It's right here. So to Prabhupada, it's very clear. So we just need to keep reading and hearing from him. Okay, anyone who can understand the plan of the Supreme Lord and cultivate Krishna consciousness is most intelligent. The creation and destruction of the cosmic manifestation are under the superior guidance of God. Thus the battle of Kurukshetra was fought according to the plan of God. Arjuna was refusing to fight, but he was told that he should fight in accordance with the desire of the Supreme Lord. Then he would be happy. If one is in full Krishna consciousness and his life is devoted to the Lord's transcendental service, he is perfect. So I don't know if that had the same impact on anyone like it did yesterday as we were reading this. When you've got it in front of you and we're discussing it and we've got questions, this was a very powerful purport. Okay. Let's see. About 10 years ago, I was in Mayapur and caught a ride to Calcutta to the airport, and just happened to be with Kalakanta. And so we were riding in the taxi from Mayapur to the airport, and it was Bhaktisiddhanta's appearance day. And so we were discussing Bhaktisiddhanta, and we came to the point that Bhaktisiddhanta was very strict. And we talked about that, very conservative. And then, at the same time, he's very liberal. He was advocating everyone can become a Brahmin. This was seen as so liberal. The conservative Brahmins were freaked out by that. They were aspiring to have him assassinated. They saw it as such a threat. So we were talking about that, this idea of having both extreme, being extremely conservative and extremely liberal, so much that they negate each other. He's not conservative. He's not liberal. So what is he? And are there any other people in our line that are like that? And do we have any other people in our line that are like that? So extremely conservative and so extremely liberal that they are neither. Anyone? Yes. Yeah, just go ahead. You're going to have to talk a little louder. Just one name.
I'm thinking, okay, well, I just have a question, kind of, like, I want to understand what you're presenting. So, like, Bhaktisiddhanta, he was conservative in the sense that when someone takes up Krishna consciousness, they should be regulated and they should be fixed somehow in some sort of whatever he was giving. But he was liberal in the sense that anyone can take up Krishna consciousness, not that one side he's liberal, one side he's conservative. So, like, I mean, I don't really understand, like, you know, what, how do you mean?
Okay. Yes, thank you. He was like that. Was what they call in the business world the funnel. You have a wide open side here, and then you narrow it down. So yeah, you let everyone in, and then we let everyone in the temple, and then we work on them, purifying them, and then refining them. So you have a tiny little refined personality. But yes.
Brahmins in Vrindavan thought he was liberal, you know?
Yes.
And, you know, we're thinking...
He was liberally allowing all kinds of people in, while at the same time being so conservative and strict with himself that he was taking on these heavy austerities. But my question is still there. Who else
right,
in our line? Yeah, there you go, finally, okay. Our Prabhupada, yes.
You're dealing with an audience and you're trying to pull them forward, you know, you're trying to pull them forward to something, like you were saying. You're dealing with an audience and you're trying to pull them forward. You're dealing with an audience and you're trying to pull them...
Bring an audience and, yeah,
so
help them progress.
You've got to attract the audience and then according to their proclivities, you know, if someone could handle it, he would... Give them a hard time, you know, I guess is one way to put it. Just to
yes.
Clean them up, but if someone wasn't so tough, he'd be kind of explaining them. Why did I?
So, yeah, he was under fire from the Brahmins in India for his liberal actions of accepting women as disciples and in the temple. And then he was under fire from the liberal people in America and all over the West because of his very seemingly conservative statements. I couldn't find this, but it's a letter I read many years ago where he says, "We are not for anyone or any cause, nor are we against anyone or any cause. We are only for Krishna and the cause of Krishna consciousness." So getting behind, like devotees were getting involved with anti-abortion groups and vegetarian groups and other political groups, and Prabhupada said, no, don't get involved with them. We are only for Krishna. We are only for the cause of Krishna. I go to different kinds of protests and rallies. There was a group of people protesting against Monsanto, and I wish I would gone to the one that just happened a few weeks ago, the No Kings Day. What I like to do is I go to those things dressed as a devotee, and I go up to people as sincerely as possible, and I say, I want to thank you for so sincerely taking your valuable time to try to make an impact in society, to try to improve the world. And it immediately disarms them, and they become grateful, and then they ask me, well, what are you about? And you give them that compliment. Whatever cause they're into, I could go to a pro-Trump rally and say the same thing to those people. And then they would ask, well, what are you about? What are these books about? And then I'd say, you need these books. These will help you to carry on your philanthropic activities and to keep a stable mind. And it'll give you immense determination to carry on with your work. Congratulations. You're trying to improve the world. It's an impossible task. But you are unlimited, and that's what this book says. It will teach you how to access the unlimited. All right, so another question or a comment.
Comment. Thank you for the class. Sorry I came a little late. This idea of conservative versus liberal, conservative versus liberal. So the beginning of the movement, after hearing from Prabhupada something, Allen Ginsberg asked Hayagriva Prabhu. I guess they felt comfortable with each other. They both had big beards. And not only that. And he asked, do you think that Swami is too conservative for New York, or too conservative for America? And I agree, we didn't know exactly how to answer. But when Prabhupada himself heard that, this idea that he was conservative, he said, how conservative? Basically, he was saying, I broke so many rules. For instance, sannyasa is not allowed to cross the ocean. But I didn't let that stop me. Prabhupada, in terms of the Vedic culture, he upheld the Vedic culture, obviously, but at the same time, he took risks for giving the mercy to the likes of us. This issue of homosexuality, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm what do we used to call it, fuddy-duddy or something. Just Srila Prabhupada didn't. You seem to make an equation between, like, there are men and there are women, and there are homosexuals and heterosexuals. Like, they're equally, just, you know. It's all quite okay. Srila Prabhupada, even in a purport in Srimad Bhagavatam, he said the desire to have sex one man with another man is sinful. It was a one-sentence purport, but Lord Brahma was in the creation.
Yeah, that's the one we just read.
Oh, great coincidence. All these gremlins were, and they wanted to have sex with Lord Brahma.
Yeah.
And Prabhupada makes that point very clearly. So, it's good. We want, it's nice to be up to date, politically correct, and encouraging. But we have to be careful that we don't cross wires with some fundamental Vedic principles that Srila Prabhupada took great pains to instill in us. I guess that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Okay, fundamental Vedic principles. Well, anyway, that's what the whole thing was about. The fundamental Vedic principle is the material world is here for us to rectify our consciousness. Some of us are going to have a different set of cards. It's not that people choose to be a certain way, left-handed or gender preference. It just happens. That's the cards you're dealt with. You could say, well, it's according to your karma that you got that. Yeah. But no one, as far as devotional service is, no one, how does that go? No one is qualified and no one is excluded. None of us are qualified, and none of us are excluded.
If someone has a disease, they can still participate, but the idea is to cure the disease. I'll just leave it as an open question. You're making an analogy or a comparison between male and female, and it's equivalent heterosexual and homosexual, that, you know, these are just different varieties, left-handed and right-handed. I don't think that Srila Prabhupada was that liberal. Just some food for thought.
No.
Food for thought.
Excuse me. But, I mean, Prabhupada, when he had Vedic marriages, they were heterosexual. But at the same time, if somebody had, to use the judgmental term, alternate desires, he still engaged them, because they're jivas.
Yeah. Jivas.
And all this stuff that we're dealing with here is all, not the deep conditioning, they can't just intellectually turn off. But nonetheless, it's temporary conditioning, and as Maharaj was saying, by the process of the purifier. So, you know, we're just trying to engage jivas, and there are certain, you know, external standards for upholding, but they're all jivas, and we're just trying to engage them.
Yes, thank you. And you brought up marriage. That's something Prabhupada really criticized was... Yep.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Quick comment, but the question behind. Years ago, I gave a Bhagavad Gita to one of my uncles. I gave a Bhagavad Gita to one of my uncles. And so I met him a couple of years later, and he said, I agree with everything what your Prabhupada says, but I do not agree with where Krishna says to Arjuna, it's lust only. And so then I said, well, I was pretty young and I didn't really know how to answer. Maybe I don't even know how to answer it. No. But I said, because it pricks us that we notice it, that it bothers us in some way inside. So what I want to ask you, Prabhu, is, like, as you're preaching, and this topic comes up of sex or unsex or whatever, and so how do you feel comfortable in talking about it, or you rather say, well, demons are people who are averse to Krishna, and devotees are persons who are favorable to Krishna and want to follow him? That's another way to, you know. So what is your take, and how do you tackle situations like this?
I didn't get the, what am I addressing?
I want to find out, like, when we talk about sex, or, you know, and differentiate between demons and devotees. So some people may not be comfortable in talking on that topic. And so if they say, well, demons are people who are averse to Krishna, and devotees are persons who are favorable to Krishna and follow him. So is that okay, or you have to give them?
It depends on the situation. Generally, that's the distinction. Devotees are attracted to Krishna, they follow Krishna, and demonic, Prabhupada quotes, how does that go? Asura, anyway, Dvabhuta Sargalokesmin, Daiva Masura Eva, how's the rest of it go? Anyway, it says pretty much what you just said. It depends what the discussion is. If the discussion is deep, you just open up chapter 16, Bhagavad Gita.
Just a quick comment, I guess. Every temple I served at, and this is my fourth temple, has had homosexuals. And from what I see, it's at this point, it's acceptable. So I think we have to differentiate between, like, somebody who's by his psycho physical nature is homosexual, but understands the philosophy and does not engage in the sex, and somebody who's active in religion. Can you hear me? I was saying that you have to differentiate between somebody who understands the philosophy and does not engage in illicit activities, and yet they by their psychophysical nature, if they are homosexual, there's nothing they can do about it, just like you're talking about being left them. Like, for example, in Soviet Union, they forced, my mom, she's left me, so they forced in school everybody to write with the right hand. My mom, she was, like, suffering, she was crying, younger, I guess they were like forced to write and do everything with the right hand. And here we have, again, devotees who are homosexuals, but they understand the philosophy and they are they're doing everything they're supposed to do, you know, who cares what they think? Like our mentality doesn't matter, they act properly, and it should not matter at all, it should not be treated. We should be treated just like anybody else. So, that's my sense.
Question. First of all, I want to thank you for your careful sensitivity around this topic. I was in the majority room, but I could hear the class. And so, I really appreciate that. But am I incorrect to say that there's 8,400,000 species and homosexuality is a species? That's what that's how I interpreted when I read about Lord Brahma and how we, come out of the anus.
But the demons came out from there. These are not homosexuals, these are demons, and they're not strictly homosexual, they're everything sexual, including their father.
Yes, I get that. Okay. That's I just thought out of the 8,400,000 species, there were another species.
I don't know.
But regardless, whether, they are homo sapiens, so whether it's the rules are applied to all of us the same, regardless of what our preference is. So, in that sense, things not to have illicit sex, and these individuals, like you mentioned, and some of the leaders, these individuals had that tendency. Prabhupada knew their nature. He engaged them to the fullest, and they were able to do things that you and I have not done for Lord Chaitanya's mission, or that you and I have not, that they've done some, they've participated in such a way that they gave their all to serving Prabhupada after decades of austerities, whatever, some of them decided, it's like we all decide at some point we have where we draw the line, or we want sense gratification, or we want to engage our senses, and that's, it just so happens that some of them that were leaders, it was a little more disturbing or bewildering than if I would do it, or somebody else would do it. But I'm glad that they were in the movement, I'm glad that they served Prabhupada, and continue to serve Prabhupada.
Thank you. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.